Thank you, residents and staff, for attending this evening. We'd like to open the Special Urban Planning Committee this evening. And I'll start by acknowledging the Kaurna people, our traditional custodians of this land, and we pay our respects to their elders past and present. We're going to run through a bit of formalities at first, and then we'll move through to our public hearings shortly. But item three on our agenda is members' declarations of interest, and we'll start by acknowledging that all of us elected members have some connection with the community, and we may also be aware of your submissions, which we'll talk about in a moment. But we do know residents, and we do have that connection with the community, so we just wanted to have that as an overarching declaration. And do any other members have any specific conflicts that they wish to raise?
So we're
talking to the panel at the moment. We'll come to you in a moment once we get into our public submissions. So thank you, members. So this evening, I'm Councillor Luke Hutchinson, and I'm the Chair of the Urban Planning Committee. On behalf of Council, I'd like to thank you all for attending this evening. Tonight, we're talking about something that's probably the biggest change to our planning rules in the history of the City of Marion. The intention of this development plan is to make our city a better place to live, and we genuinely want to hear your views. We genuinely want to hear them. Each council in South Australia, as you'd be aware, has a development plan that provides guidelines on what new construction can be built and where it can be built. By law, development plans must be reviewed regularly and ensure that they cater for the changing city that we live in. Since 2015, your council has been extensively reviewing the development plan, and obviously we've released the outcome of that for public consultation about 8 weeks ago. At a high level, our proposal aims to restrain the overdevelopment between Sturt Road and the tramline and take pressure off of our local streets. But at the same time, many in the southern part of the council want to make it easier to subdivide. Written feedback was open until the 14th of November, as you'd be aware, and as part of that we received 298 submissions. Of these submissions, a number of people have requested the opportunity to be heard at this hearing tonight, and Council's Urban Planning Committee will be considering the verbal submissions tonight, as well as your written submissions that we've already received. I'd also like to introduce the members of the committee. We have Mayor Chris Hanna to my left, Councillors Raylene Telfer, Nathan Pryor and Tim Gard, and also present tonight are Councillors Westwood and Byram, as well as a range of our staff. Representatives, or respondents rather, who have previously advised that they wish to be heard this evening will be heard in the first instance, and then we can open that up to those that have already provided a submission as well, and then any others. The next steps for tonight, or into the following tonight I should say, a special general council meeting will be held next Monday, where we'll consider all the written and verbal submissions and we'll undertake a final draft of the development plan. And it's important to remember that the development plan is a balance between what we see our vision of our city, but also what state government also requires from us in terms of future development and allowing that to occur. Once completed, the final draft will be presented to the Planning Minister for his consideration. So, without further ado, I'll hand over to our Customer Experience Manager, Karen Cox, who's going to explain how the public submissions will be heard, and we'll proceed from there.
Thank you, Councillor Hutchinson, for the opening. It's great to see so many familiar faces in the audience today from our drop-ins, and thank you so much for coming. So just to elaborate a little bit more on the proceedings for this evening, for those of you that have lodged a submission and indicated that you would like to be heard, you've all been placed on the agenda. We've structured the agenda suburb by suburb where possible. We will call your name up and we'll invite you to come to the front table. We will invite you to speak into the microphone. As we sent out, hopefully you received your information on this evening, these will be recorded, and the reason being then we've got verbatim comments to help with the special council meeting. You'll be allocated a total of 5 minutes per person. There's quite a few people that we're getting through tonight, and I'll give you a 30-second warning at the end of that 5 minutes. If the panel have requiring some kind of clarification on any of the points that you've made through your verbal submission, they may ask questions, and if not, we'll very quickly move on to the next person. In the interest of the intent of tonight, if you find that somebody else has already raised information that is consistent with the information you were going to raise, you're most welcome to decline the opportunity to stand up. So we're really trying to focus on new information as it comes through. So if the person before you shares your views and you don't want to get up at that point, it's fine, just give me a nod, let me know. And also there'll be names on the agenda of people that aren't here, because we've placed everybody on the agenda that has ticked in their submission that they would like to be heard tonight. We're going to be as efficient as we can, and we ask for your participation and cooperation as we go through. With that, we might start with our first submission. Is Michael Steele in it here? From the Haller Cove area. Mr. Steele? Okay. We'll move on to number two. Is Pragathi Sridhar here? Thank you. Please come up and speak into the microphone.
Good evening, Mayor and councillors. I'm happy to be here. And good evening, Mayor and Councillor. I'm in Hallett Cove, and I'm happy to see that this area has been retained as a low density area. But one of the characteristics of a low density neighbourhood would be that people want to have big yards, and they would have a boat and a caravan and multiple cars. So my concern that I have expressed and would like to just reiterate is that the minimum frontage width on the other roads, I think, is not enough to cater for that, because lots of people do park their cars outside and on the street, and with lower frontages, and you don't have as much space to be. So that's my concern. So what I submitted along with my report, it's a big report, but there are a few highlighted sections in that report is about social cities, which is about neighbourliness and how you can improve the way the houses are built to improve neighbourliness. So they have suggestions in that report. It's a written report, so if you could actually look at it and see how that can be incorporated into this plan. So I won't take 5 minutes, and I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next on the agenda, we've just got a Chris from Kingston Park that didn't provide a surname. Okay, thank you. Moving into the next area, I'm looking for Sally Bevan from the Merino area. Sally, are you in the room? Okay, Peter Hoskin. Mr. Hoskin, please come up. Thank you.
Many thanks to the Mayor and Council for the opportunity to be consulted regarding the plan. First of all, I appreciate the huge amount of time and effort spent in planning and conducting this consultation. I would like to emphasise that I live in Merino. I cannot subdivide my property, even though it is over 1,000 square metres. If I walk 2 minutes down the road to Kingston Park, owners can subdivide. I believe that they only need about 750 square metres or less. I need 1,500 square metre block to be able to subdivide, as the current council regulations state. It is a question of fairness, of equitable agreement, I consider. The terrain in Merino and Kingston Park is similar on the ocean side of the railway. I have noted that a few residents who are opposing subdivision in Reno have in the last few years already taken advantage of building on subdivided properties in Marino. This has happened before the subdivision regulations changed a few years ago, or they are lucky enough to just have a large enough block of 1,500 square metres. It is too expensive to keep living on a large block. After living with my family in Marino for 32 years, it would be wonderful to stay where we live and love. The increasing cost of maintenance, rates and utility charges will force us to move, as most of our children now have their own homes out of the area. We do not need to live in a large house on a large block. Many properties in Marina are very run down. Buildings in the grounds are unmaintained and very untidy. It is obvious that the properties are too large to maintain. I'm sure the residents of Marino do not want the character of the area changed dramatically with many small blocks. Surely we can have some similar size blocks that are permitted in Kingston Park. Why should I have to leave a place and the community that I love and have contributed to for 32 years? Regards, Peter Hoskin. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. Any questions? Craig Alday? Robert Cooch? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to make some comments about this plan. I'll be quick.
Can you hear me okay? I've got notes here, I'll read this to make it quick. Residents of Marion and Holdfast Bay Council should be informed of the main reason behind the proposed council-wide zoning changes in their respective areas. The simple facts of the matter are that the state government, supported by the Liberals and the Xenophon people, has decided that the population of South Australia needs to increase by 545,000 over the next 30 years. This is based on the mistaken view that such an increase is necessary to increase or maintain our prosperity, when in fact adding more people to the population will decrease the quality of life for existing South Australians. That is, more traffic congestion, more noise, more fights over sea views, more competition for already scarce jobs, more young people unable to afford a home, less water to go around, etc., etc. Given that the government has decided on such a ridiculous, and I'll repeat that, ridiculous and stupid policy, it is clear they've now lumbered councils with the job of implementing it. Councils, including Marion and Holdfast Bay, have therefore been instructed to prepare amended development plans to accommodate the proportion of the proposed 545,000 increase, whether it's in the interests of existing ratepayers or not. All councils should advise Planning Minister Rao that no plan that aims to accommodate more people in their area will be adopted. Thank you very much. I'm happy to...
Thank you very much for your submission.
I'm happy to answer questions if you wish. But I'm aware of the time. I know there's a lot of people.
But no, thank you very much for your submission. Thank you. We're looking for Hans Van Babel and Dan Johnson. Okay, great. Thank you.
Good evening, and thank you very much for allowing me to talk tonight. I appreciate the opportunity. I suppose that I'm in sympathy with the previous speaker, but I have some more personal matters to mention, I think, which hopefully adds a little bit to the case. While I appreciate that there is, in fact, some pressure to actually rezone, one of the things that really upset us in terms of where we live in Marino is the apparent blanket approach that one size fits all. I view where we live, and I've lived there for 10 years, as a hills place area, and indeed a local hills suburb. And in that light, I think it would be inappropriate to actually consider subdividing in a blanket approach. In other words, I think there should be more care taken in terms of possibly some areas of Merino, but it doesn't seem that that is a choice that is being made, and I understand and I agree with the previous speaker that there is some pressure to actually say that what happens in one area should happen in another, and I think that's totally poor planning for a start and inappropriate for the topography of the area as well, and also the environment of the area too. While I sympathise with Peter Hoskin, I do think that is an issue that needs some tailoring, if you like, for circumstances like that. I think that one reason why we live where we live is that we also have spent many years saving to buy the house that we have. It's a personal matter of residence. We don't want to see... Thank you. We do not want to see our sacrifice, and that includes the fact that we almost pay the highest rates in the whole of the city of Marion, taken to what I've called a townhouse type development in our street in particular. And it's not just the housing and the views that may reduce our amenity, and this is subject to potential court litigation, and there are precedents in that, including one that's across the road from our very own place. It's also a matter that it's important that when we're actually looking at development, that we think of the whole environment, which doesn't just benefit Merino people, it also benefits the people everywhere in terms of the environment, the trees that would come down, the fact that there would be effects on the fauna in the area as well as the flora. And these things just don't seem to have been discussed. It doesn't mean that they haven't been, but there's no evidence of that in my readings at least. And I think that's why we very much oppose the blanket approach. We also think that from the point of view of the real concerns that we have, it's also interesting to note that the area, for example, of Merino where the local Hills Quarry is to be developed, that would be a perfect greenfield site to have a combination of higher density and environmentally acceptable location. But to have an area which is right next to a nature gully, which has its own land and has volunteer people actually working to make the native vegetation thrive, to have that under threat by buildings that do not cover what is necessarily an area that will actually encourage the growth of native vegetation, untidy or not, I think it's really important that we give people the opportunity and incentives to stay there and do that. Finally, I think in all that area as well, I'm also concerned by the fact that not only do we have this issue of natural vegetation, but I was listening to the radio as I came here almost in a situation of fate, and that a lot of those buildings, as I see around me, in fact the edges of Merino and Brighton Road in particular, there's absolutely no areas available for shade, for covering verandas, for covering the housing. In other words, they're architectural boxes because they're entitled to build X amount of square metres on X amount of block. Now, if that happens throughout areas of Merino, that is not doing the whole environment good, and we have to think more in terms of the big picture of our environment, the cost of air conditioning, the very poor use or high use and poor use of energy facilities. And I think that's basically where I think the bigger picture is, not just showing our bias for where I live in my street. And I think that's all I need to say about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your submission. Any questions?
Mr. Van Barvel, I do have a question. Quick comment that you probably do realise that any development plan amendment can only deal with built form pretty well. So you make some good points about vegetation, but I won't deal with that.
Sure.
What I did want to come back to was your point about generalisations and the starting point, obviously, in what was put out for consultation. As you say, a blanket approach, that's a fair comment. When I've looked at the submissions from people in Merino, and I've read through every single one of them, if I want to make a sub-generalisation, it's that there were more people east of the railway line, more or less getting up onto the escarpment, you could say, who were against the notion of more liberal subdivision. And there seemed to be a majority of respondents who were on the seaside of the railway line in various places who were more in favour or more comfortable with the idea of more subdivision.
Yes.
Do you have any comment about that sort of dichotomy?
Yes, yes I do. I actually live on the seaside, but I love both sides, if you want to call it sides. And therefore I stress that my interest, because it would not even affect our street from what I understand. But my reason why I think that is the case is that there are people who would like to, potentially exploit their blocks, because obviously if I demolished my house, if it was subdividable, I could build two. So naturally, from a purely economic point of view, it would be a good thing. And as I said, we've struggled to actually stay there because I'm now semi-retired and my partner works for a very few hours, so it's just a matter of just being able to afford to live there. It's the whole area that's beautiful. And so from my point of view, I think generally it's mercenary, and I again exclude Peter Hoskin's case. I think that he's got a justified case there. But I think that generally on that side, they just want to follow the whole Frost Bay line, which I might say is very much about pro-develop as many as you can. I mean, diagonally opposite us, we've got 2 3.5-storey townhouses going up, and we had to go to court to make sure they didn't completely ruin our view. That's the sort of thing that we are frightened of. But for people in the whole of Marino, I think we're justified in saying, look, this is so dangerous, because once you set these plans in motion with a blanket approach, even though I know you're under state government pressure, I think we really have problems about really destroying the character which actually brought us to the area of Marion, which we really love.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for your submission and for answering the additional questions from our mayor.
Thank you very much.
David Bagshaw, welcome.
Mayor, councillors, so my name is David Bagshaw. I'm the president of Marino Residents Association. And tonight I'm here to present the disparate views expressed by some members of the Marino community at our successful public forum held on November the 1st. We had over 50 people in attendance, and it was supported and represented by a local elected member and officers of council. This ambitious and bold City of Marion Housing Diversity BPA is a sound initiative in response to the broader 30-year plan for Metropolitan Adelaide. Council should be commended on this approach. However, the commendation comes with some qualifications, and I do not propose to address the detail of the views that were expressed at the forum and in many written submissions. There are others here tonight more qualified than me to address those detailed matters. I will deal with the strategic thinking that came out of our forum. In essence, the views expressed were varied. There was some enthusiasm for increased housing diversity, but there was equal concern for the potential negative impacts on Marino. The main concern was there's not enough information available to answer the many questions or enough time to allocate it to make an informed decision. In essence, it's hard for members of the public to try and imagine the impact of the changes, as the information provided was very generic. It was felt that more case studies and live examples are needed to help people understand the impact. More modelling of the impact beyond statistical yield would have helped. It is interesting to note that City of Holfast Bay are developing a similar DPA. However, their first step was to establish a housing strategy which would respond to increased density. This strategy provides graphic examples of what changes will look like in terms of character, housing types and amenity. They are undertaking public consultations on the strategy, and round one closed today. This housing strategy will help people understand and inform the DPA process and aid the community's understanding of the impacts and their ability to influence the outcome. The City of Marion DPA, as others will have argued, has less emphasis on the amenity and essential character of Marino. Marino needs to be treated as a special area and its essence protected and enhanced through the DPA. The DPA needs more guidelines, not only for individual development, but zones, to ensure that the character of streets and neighbourhoods are consistent rather than haphazard. Overall, it seems like a good idea, but it's too little, too late, and the DPA does not provide sufficient information, modelling, or time for residents to respond in an informed way. It's also significant to note that the proposed DPA for Cement Hill development is still not resolved. Clearly, this medium to high density development, which will yield up to 600 new homes, will have significant impact on Marino, almost doubling the population. Surely this needs to be resolved in concert with any general DPA for Marino. Together, these DPAs will have potentially wide-ranging impacts on infrastructure in Marino, something that has not been addressed in the DPA process, and that something that is naturally fueling unhappiness in accepting the housing diversity DPA as it stands. An 8-week consultation period for a citywide housing-focused DPA would appear to be unprecedented. It puts undue pressure on the community and council. And it's hard to believe that including this hearing, the consultation, council now needs to translate that into an amended DPA to sign off at council on the 27th of November prior to issuing to the minister. This seems unreasonable and unwise. We were informed at the forum where residents resoundingly expressed their concern for the inadequate consultation and time allocation that council is powerless to challenge the state government on this incredibly tight timeframe. So we asked council through the committee that it seeks permission from state government to extend the timeline and consultation process as it relates to the Southern Hills policy area, and that it addresses these shortcomings via a more integrated modelling approach, including infrastructure impact assessments and further consultations. Thank you for the opportunity to make our submission.
Questions?
Thank you. Just a comment, the 8 weeks, and I'll ask planning staff to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's set by statute in terms of comment on a DPA. But I take your point that there's a lot to digest. What I wanted to ask about, Mr. Bagshaw, was the Marino Residents Association submission, which I read as encouraging reduced frontage widths for new development. In other words, that would allow greater density. Just want you to clarify that. And also, if you could also comment on the idea of if there was going to be sort of part of Marino where more density would be allowed and part where it wouldn't, do you have a view either personally or from the association?
I guess from the association's point of view, the submission we made was just really a report on the forum, and it expressed the views that we heard on the night. So I guess the association doesn't actually stand behind really any of those, just the fact that there was a lot of diverse views, and whilst there were some people who were in favour, there were quite a few against. And we felt that it's purely about process and time. So I think that's, with more time, could answer the second part, but it's, as you can see, it's a very complex issue. But certainly I think that's the reference to zones, would be to look at the whole area and try and designate some hot spots, if you like, for increased density over others, and we take into account the critical amenity issues that people are dealing with.
Thank you. Michael Rutherford. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, elected members and ladies and gentlemen, my name is Michael Rutherford, I'm a resident of Marino, and Mr. Mayor, I live east of the railway line, and so and I have a contrary view to what you concluded. I've lived in the area for 40 years, that's 40 years, and to put things in perspective, I'm in favour of increased subdivision, and to add a bit of history to that, when I first moved I had uninterrupted views from the eastern suburbs across the city through to the and down the coastline. I now have very few views. I accept that philosophically. Most of my views are taken by trees that myself and neighbours have planted. And I think that some of the comments that I've heard prior to tonight, I think of people wanting to protect their views. I can understand that, but I think philosophically that's something I disagree with. Firstly, can I commend the 30-year plan? I think any attempt to reduce urban sprawl is highly commendable. And can I commend the council too on this particular process? I think the time that the elected members and staff have put in, both in this building answering questions and at the drop-in sessions, and the whole process, I think has been very good, and I disagree that the 8-week timeline has been insufficient. I think it has been sufficient. However, I do agree with what David has said in that if there was some modelling, it may have helped us understand what would increase traffic flow and what the likelihood of further housing might be. However, I'd like to move on to the nub of my point is that the Hills Policy Area 16 as proposed I think is too big. It's geographically, historically and socially diverse, and I think to have the same policy area, same policies covering such a large area is folly. In my own suburb of Marino, as has been teased out by a couple of the earlier speakers, I think that area is also diverse. West of the railway line tends to be flatter, fewer vacant allotments, more varied architecture, and of course the elephant in the room, most of those houses are of much higher value. East of the rail, generally older houses, that's where I live, less developed, more vacant land and certainly larger allotments. I think the current policy area makes subdivision very, very difficult east of the railway line because of the sloping nature. And for those who are unfamiliar with it, you know, most of the subdivision have to be at least 900, if not 1,100 square metres. Therefore, I think any attempt to make it easier is commendable. But the proposals, I think, make it no easier. In fact, I would argue they make it more difficult. At first glance, 350 or 400 square metre allotments seem to suggest that we could have a lot more urban infill. But with minimum frontages of 10 or 12 metres for detached and semi-detached houses, makes it virtually impossible. In my street, I think every single house is on an 18-metre frontage. So even if the existing houses were demolished, we still wouldn't be able to get detached and semi-detached houses on that under the new proposal, even though our allotments are very deep. My own one is 87 metres. That's 87 metres deep. But I wouldn't be able to get any more subdivision on my allotment unless I go hammerhead. In conclusion, I think the principles of the plan of diversity and vibrancy are at the essence of what should be any subsequent decisions. I don't believe there is sufficient diversity in our particular neighbourhood. We have no terrace houses, no duplexes, no apartments, and while some people might applaud that, I think the end result of that is that we have fewer younger people in the area, very few single people living. My own street has 31 houses fronting it, 22 of them were pre-1980s. We previously had 61% of them had children, now only 16% have them. Most of the houses are occupied by people of my generation. The land is too big, it's covered with weeds, we have difficulty maintaining it. We would like to stay in the area, but we're unable to unless we can subdivide. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Angela Davison. Thank you. Thank you.
I've got a presentation.
Oh, okay.
I'm hoping. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of myself, who owns property in Marino, as well as Roberto Simmons, who is the property owner in Marino, and Eureka Property Holdings, who own property in Morfettville. So if I do that. This is an image that I showed at the public meeting that was organised by Marino Residents Association that shows the French Riviera on the top and Marino on the bottom, and it was what attracted me to Marino in the first place only 14 years ago, 1-4, but still, was just that stunning image of the place. I love the idea that I might move into a place that over time is going to grow more dense with a variety of fabulously designed dwellings, and like the Riviera, was able to maintain the landscape. The trees and so forth. So moving on, thanks. can't see that, but I guess what I've proposed is another way of looking at it, and probably challenging maybe to some, and that is that I've suggested that the minimum frontage in particular of the proposed policy area 10 be changed to be reduced so that it is actually relates to the suburb of Marino's historic allotment patterns, which are shown on the next image. If you can move on to that, where I've shown just one there at 17 and a bit metres, around about, it's not precise, and that's fairly typical of Marino. There's some at 18, but not many at 20. So in order to achieve a reasonable pattern of development, I think that needs to be reviewed, because this development plan amendment is going to have an impact over a long period of time. If you move on, please, to the next one. I'm also proposing that we review the way in which the train station environs are dealt with through this, or maybe more particularly another DPA, and I suggest that we could achieve higher densities around the train stations within close proximity of about 200 metres. And there's some quite challenging densities suggested there, or at least minimum lot sizes, a lot less than what the DPA is proposing. But that's commensurate with what's happening interstate and overseas, and I think it's fairly reasonable around train stations in order to, and including to activate those areas and keep those train stations running. We can move on to the next one. I was going to give you an example of a lot that's 1,400 square metres, and it's on the Cove Road, number 69. If you move on to the next one, please. An application we submitted to council last year, or actually 3 years ago now, for this allotment to be divided into, the application was for two dwellings. It was withdrawn in the end because we realised that there was going to be little support for it. But if you see that sort of what I call that finger group at the top there, the allotments would have been the pink one and that sort of dusky pink one at the bottom. These are owned by Roberto Simmons, so I'm moving on to my client's land. And this was flipped around, actually, unfortunately. Cove Road's on the left-hand side. The allotments would have been about 720 square metres each, a little bit more, and that didn't meet the requirements of the development plan because of the requirement for the gradient of the land requiring additional land of around about, we worked out, probably 920 square metres in reality. But that's the sort of development that Roberto would like to be able to submit again immediately. He and his wife, Anna, want to move to Marino. But Roberto did tell me that he would jump off his own cliff if he sold it and somebody else achieved this, so he's going to keep going until this happens. That's some numbers associated with that other with Roberto's proposal, and that happens to be a couple of kids down at Marino Rocks. I wanted to mention about Marino character. I know the Marino Residents Association is particularly concerned.
I'm just going to pause. That's the timer. I do notice that you're also speaking for Roberto, and is it Eureka Group as well?
Thank you.
Yes, so we'll allow the extra time to move on to Eureka Group. Is that all in the one presentation?
It is.
It is. Thank you. We'll reset.
So Marino Residents Association, rightly, and many members of the association residents, are concerned about the character of Marino. And my sense of it is that the policy area should be dislocated from the Hallett Cove policy area, that the two places, in my view, don't relate to one another. If anything, Seacliff Park has got more relevance and character to Marino than Hallett Cove. What that means for the DPA, I'm not really sure. I'm loath to suggest that it be held up over this matter, and I'm generally in support of the DPA. Nonetheless, reading the desired character statement, there's very little Marino essence in... sorry, Dave, I think that's your word, the essence word, but it's true. and I think that needs to be attended to. It is a super special place. Having said that, I am interested in achieving some yield greater than one dwelling on my 800 square metre allotment, so I make no bones about that. But this needs to be looked at. So moving on to the next one, I have a client who owns 5,000 square metres of land in Morfettville. The property is currently tied up with a 400 square metre house, and the whole of the place, the whole of that 5,000 square metres, is tied up with a local heritage listing that is particularly interested in that house, which is called Cobham House, and the garden in the front of it. It's is a residential care facility at the moment. If we can move on to that next slide. So irrespective, in the case of this meeting, of the local heritage place, my client, Eureka Property Holdings, is keen to see a change to the way that council is approaching this policy area, because what council is determining is that, and I think it's been mentioned already, is that it's sort of okay to increase minimum lot sizes in this area of Morfettville, and okay to decrease them in Merino, and that somehow or other there's a balance struck, and that seems to make sense. I'm not sure that that does make any sense, and I really suggest that council retain the lot sizes and the frontages that they've already got in that area, or they do what I'm suggesting and decrease them further. So those people who are 8 kilometres to the CBD in the what's effectively the inner ring of suburbs in Adelaide can subdivide their land and age in place, and have some sort of continuity of the emerging pattern of development that's been achieved as a result of council's earlier policy making. So on to the recommendations now, that some further analysis needs to be done in relation to Merino and maybe Seacliff Park, which has particular character, and that people writing policy and involved in that really get to know these places. I think I've got another 5 minutes. Thank you. Also that council start to look at the train station nodes other than around Oakland and think about, well, what could be achieved in terms of a greater density in those places to activate the little centres like around Merino Community Hall area. I'd like you to...
I might just pause there and say that's time. I just see if there's anyone on the panel that has any questions. Yes, thank you.
My question's about the very varied opinions that you've heard at Merino. How do you marry your opinion with the vast opinions from Merino, given that in a couple of weeks we're going to submit to the government a DPA on this area?
I don't feel you're capable of submitting the right DPA to the government in a couple of weeks. I'm sorry, but that's how I feel. Because sufficient analysis hasn't been undertaken around what is the character and the special placedness of Merino. And I want to add Seacliff Park into that for its sake. And I think more work needs to be done. I'm not really understanding the emergency, and I'm struggling to imagine that Minister Rao, right now, 3 months before an election, is seeing that too. I would have thought that he would be more conservative than that and not rushing to approve something that could be quite unpopular. So I'm just suggesting that the urgency may not be. But reconciling it is difficult. I see, what I see is my neighbours I guess I see a combination of things, including the human thing of my neighbours ageing and unable to manage large properties, places overgrown, council verges are overgrown, and my neighbours are having to continue to look after hilly slopes of council verges and struggling with even that sort of thing, let alone looking after their own properties. That in and of itself is not reason to say that, you know, you can subdivide land. But I think that there are other reasons too, like our minimum lot size I think is around 700 square metres for a land division, or 900 square metres if it's a bit hilly, and 1100 square metres if it's super hilly. You know, that's expansive and unreasonable in this day and age. I think we ought to be preserving our food bowl, and which is what's on my last slide, I think, and we ought to be actually providing better community services.
Thank you. The presentation will be included as part of the submission. Any other questions from the panel? Thank you very much. I'm mindful it's quite warm in this room. I just wanted to give you all an update that the maintenance team are looking at it for us now. We've got lots of cold water out in the foyer on the table if you need something, and I should have an update hopefully within the next 10 minutes, and I'll keep you informed. Robert Gunn? Thank you.
Well, thank you, councillors and county mayor, for giving me the opportunity. I've listened with great interest to all of the proposals that have been put before you at the moment, but I have found another reason to be perturbed about what is occurring. And apart from departing from the well-regulated hills face zone requirements regarding housing, the problem that I can see arising from the implementation of this zoning at this time is surely by putting the cart way in front of the horse. And what I mean is the infrastructure situation. Now, the infrastructure in this area is already not able to satisfactorily serve the density of residents and will be severely deficient with the planned at least doubling of users of this facility. And that's number one, the current problem, lack of consistent water supply. Because in my situation, we're not able to be sufficiently served by the unassisted water supply. We are at the mercy of a pump located halfway down our hill to deliver sufficient supply at peak times. The problem caused by the sudden surges as the water pump kicks in are always present as the timer revolves. We find our water reticulation systems being blown apart at the nozzles and joints, and dripper hoses being split, which is accompanied by a lack of flow during the off times, which makes sustaining a modest garden in this area very difficult. And of course, if one is unfortunate to have an early appointment in the morning, or needs to shower during the day, it is sometimes almost impossible to get enough water to rinse down. Every time there's a power glitch or outage, the timing system gets out of sync. And one needs to remind the South Australian Water people to come and reset the timer. And also, when the power is down for any length of time, we suffer from the water shortage until the power is restored and the timer is reset. And this situation also applies when daylight saving time is adopted and they need to be reminded of the hourly change. At the present, we are fortunate that because of the frequency of this condition, we have been given a direct telephone number to call the depot to get a reasonably fast response to our reminders. Nothing is automatic. And another consequence of this poor supply, excuse me, is the fire danger. Now, this area of Merino at the top is bounded by scrublands. We have the Quarry Reserve, the Breeder Conservation Park, and the, I think it's still, Shido farmlands. So in summer, there is considerable danger of a fire occurring, and I'll reiterate what happened a few years ago when we did have a fire in that area, the Metropolitan Fire Service vehicles were not able to obtain sufficient volume of water from the hydrants in Bundara Road to enable their pumps to generate sufficient pressure to reach more than a few feet inside the boundaries of the parks. This was very worrying. Unfortunately, it was up to the Hallett Cove CFS and Shido's water tanker vehicles to control the burn and the danger averted. So what is needed? We need in this area a suitably elevated constant water level buffer tank or tanks to provide all-round stability to the water pressure in this area, coupled with a larger volume water mains to enable sufficient quantity of water to be delivered to cope with the projected increase in demand and in emergency use. Of course, with greater usage of water by the increased number of occupants proposed, there comes the associated problem of being able to dispose of the extra volume of sewage and grey water. So a review of the abilities of the pumping stations installed in the gullies to satisfactorily cope with this extra load is also required. So can I conclude by stressing that before any changes to the zoning regulations are contemplated,
30 seconds.
That the infrastructure should be put in place to overcome these difficulties. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your time. Jeff Alexander. Thank you.
Thanks.
Councillors. My primary concern with this proposed development plan amendment is in relation to the amenity of Marino, and I think the failure of it to actually identify what is important to the local community. From the 1,000-odd pages that were on the website to try and read through, again, I don't know how you as a council can actually go through them properly and give the necessary weight to those between now and what next week or whenever it was that you were having this meeting. So I think that timing is a really big concern there to be able to actually consider this properly and with the right depth. And there appears to be, from what I could read through in the time that I had, two very distinct camps in the things. So you've got the developers that are saying, yes, this is great, we can divide stuff up and we can you know, make huge money. You've then got the existing residents who are saying, hang about, this is going to take away from what we enjoy, what is important to us, what is nice about living in Marino. And those things are things like the views, things like the open space, the sunlight, the privacy, all of those things. They're all things that constitute amenity. They are all protected in the development plan in theory. I said there's over 100 references to the protection of amenity in the development plan. All of those things should be protected, and I don't believe that the current development plan amendment addresses that. There's one principle in particular that specifically opposes that, and I think is absolutely absurd and should be... Yeah, it's basically an embarrassment. The main concern, apart from that, I think is the implementation of how the policy is dealt with. So you were asking about how we can understand, you know, which areas should be divided, which areas shouldn't be divided. And I think it comes down to what the state government said in their review into the planning system, where it says that it's evident that the purpose of the development control is to manage risks and avoid negative impacts to neighbours and future generations. So to me that means that you need to consider in each assessment what is important to the existing residents and make sure that the proposed development doesn't affect that. It goes on to say current assessment practices are disproportionately focused on micro-level details that don't warrant such attention. And to me, that means that the numbers that are being thrown around, you know, the 300 square metres, 400 square metres, all of those things, should be considered more on a performance basis. It's a case of each individual site should be considered based on the objectives of the development plan, not necessarily the numbers in the development plan. If a certain site can be developed so that it maintains the existing amenity of the adjoining property owners, great, go for it. If it doesn't, then no. And I think that that is the responsibility of council and their policy making and their assessment teams and the management of those assessment teams to make sure that the amenity of existing owners effectively takes precedence. It's the way that the Act is written. It's the way that it's intended that the existing owners' amenity is looked after as a preference from the to the developer. But that shouldn't stop development. It should mean that, similar to a non-complying development, a developer should have to justify how their proposal meets the requirements of the development plan and maintains the amenity of the adjoining properties, and then once it can show that, it should be approved.
30 seconds.
If it can't show that, then it should be refused so that something can be developed that will show that. Thank you.
Thank you for your submission. We're now moving on to Seaview Downs. Oh, sorry, any questions? Sorry, Councillor Gard. If you'd like to come back up to the microphone for the question. Sorry. Thank you.
Yes, thanks very much, Mr. Alexander, once again for a really balanced address, I thought, as per the one the other night at the MRA, which I found probably most helpful of all. I'm very interested to know how you... I remember you commenting the other night that you are generally happy with the drive towards higher density, but that you are most concerned about amenity, something that, frankly, I share with you. Big question, though, is whether you are, at this point, near to being satisfied with the specifications that are before us in this DPA.
With the exception of Principle 5 in the proposed policy, Principle 5 in the proposed policy area, I think that's just simply absurd. But apart from that, the general thing is that there is, as other speakers have said, there's not enough definition in the character statement to say this is what is important in Marino, this is what should be looked after. There's not much reference there to how it's got to being what it is today and the specific beauty of this particular area. So in that character statement, I think there needs to be a lot more dealt with in there. And I think that it then comes down to how council manages the assessment process itself to ensure that the objectives within the development plan are met. So if you look at the way that things are assessed at the moment, objectives are primarily overlooked. It's all based on numbers. And something that might be 9 metres high might take away people's amenity and shouldn't be approved. But something that's 6 metres high might be appropriate. On the converse, something that's 12 metres high might be appropriate because it doesn't take away someone's amenity. And so it's a case of looking at the individual site, the individual thing, and checking it against those objectives which say that, you know, things shouldn't overlook, they shouldn't be overbearing, they shouldn't dominate, they shouldn't take away skyline, they shouldn't obstruct views, they shouldn't take away scenic amenity, they shouldn't, all those things that are already in the development plan. I think it's actually a procedural issue that's not being addressed properly currently, and this development plan doesn't fix it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Craig Errington up from Seaview Downs. Thank Thank you. I'd like to invite Chris Woodhouse and Tina Downs from CV Downs. Thank you. I'd like to invite Sarah Gage from... we're following a published agenda. Councillor Hutchinson, are you happy to swap the agenda point? Sure. So is that Nicole and Dennis Mitchell? Thank you. Thank you.
We are Nicole and Dennis Mitchell, and we thank you for the opportunity to speak. We are strongly opposed to the current proposed changes to rezoning for Hills Face suburbs. We have resided in CV Downs for over 31 years and chose to live there based on our lifestyle. We have no wish to see our quality of life eroded. Our opposition is based on the following. The decision to rezone at this time is being council driven, with proposed parameters being decided on by council. With state elections looming, there is no certainty the current state government's planning aspirations will be in line with those of the next government. Allowing blocks of flats, row and group dwellings on areas as small as 300 square metres will seriously diminish the amenity of our Hills Face areas that warrant protection for lifestyle, visual and environmental reasons. Notification to ratepayers of the proposed changes was scant. Adversely affected residents will be unaware of the proposals. A pamphlet in the current rates due would have notified the maximum number of ratepayers in an efficient and transparent manner. This did not occur. Marion Council has stated their decisions are in... Marion Council has stated their decisions are in keeping with adjoining council policies and name Mitcham Council. This is inaccurate, as Mitcham Council's residential foothills zone, which encompasses Hills Face suburb, states a minimum area of 700 square metres for detached dwellings and a minimum area of 500 square metres per dwelling for group. These are in fact aligned with City of Marion current zone parameters. Council are using the age in place argument for driving their land size decisions. The ability for the elderly to sell off or build a single storey dwelling in their back garden would satisfy those wishing to remain in their homes or communities. The only ones to benefit from knocking down a single home and building a block of flats will be developers for profit and council for increased rates. Multi-storey dwellings are not suitable to those wishing to age in place. Council is ineffective dealing with current densities of housing and associated issues such as dog barking, dogs at large, dogs menacing and dog attacks, illegal dumping of rubbish, illegal parking and smoke from nuisance fires, at times noxious and health depleting, from which I have sustained personal injury requiring daily medication as a direct result. We and our community have endured numerous issues which remain today as a result of Council's ineffectiveness, contradictory advice and lack of resolution. Whilst those residents out of step with our community are in the minority, their actions have a profound effect on neighbours' ability to live in peace and safety. If higher densities of housing are permitted, we cannot see how the current council inadequacies will cope with up to three times as many dwellings and the rise in associated issues. Council is persisting with housing densities they have publicly stated are inappropriate and cause significant issues with the suburbs of Dover Gardens and Seacombe Gardens. Having addressed the issues of too high density for these suburbs in the current proposals, Council is now wanting to inflict these same inappropriately high densities on our valuable Hills Face suburbs. Neither of our ward's elected members were on the Urban Planning Committee to determine block sizes, and we understand both were opposed to the proposals put forward by the committee. The same council is proposing our suburb for three times as many homes, and their occupants as are currently in existence are also proposing to halve our valuable open space at Cadell Street Reserve to create a dog park. The unsuitability of the proposed dog park is evident, council choosing to ignore the Dog and Cat Management Board guidelines in the placement and planning of this facility. Council lacks local knowledge by proposing Seacombe Road and areas uphill for 500 metres be high density so public transport can be utilised. Current timetables have two buses per hour, wholly inadequate for residents to rely on as their primary means of transport. Public transport inadequacies combined with the hilly terrain makes foot travel unsuitable. More residents will equate to more cars. Smaller block sizes will negatively affect natural environments, with less vegetation and soft surface treatment creating drainage issues with higher runoff, loss of fauna habitat and flora diversity, noise issues due to gradient and insufficient density of vegetation, overlooking due to gradient and lack of vegetation, higher heat on hard surfaces due to lack of shade. The result will be more reliance on air conditioning, generating even more heat and noise. What has changed since the April 2016 when Council's Hills Policy Area 11, which had a minimum block size of 700 square metres, stated the landscape character warrants protection from inappropriate development works. I've got one more sentence.
Sure.
Past development plans have protected our hill space for good reason. Once our valuable hill space has been built on, there will be no going back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? No. Thank you for your time. Sarah, would you like to contribute? Thank you. Before we get started, Sarah, I can confirm we've got some airflow coming through now, and we do have teams coming just to be on standby, so hopefully the room does cool down. Thank you, Sarah.
Hello, my name's Sarah Gage. I've always resided in the suburbs of CB Downs and Sutcliffe Park, but I'm a new homeowner in CB Downs. I'd like to say that regulations are in place to protect the rights of people who have invested their life savings into an area that's cohesive with their values and feel protected by the current policies and zoning laws in place. And so we need to provide places for families with children who want backyards, who want leafy suburbs. I invested in CB Downs because partly to do with the zoning laws, I felt protected that the suburb will maintain its character. The council needs to consider what will happen if they do allow development and subdivision. We were originally looking in Sutcliffe Park due to all the subdivision in CB Downs, Dover, Seacombe Gardens and Dover. There was less availability and there was a steep price rise in family housing over this period. It's very hard for young families who are working hard trying to save a deposit and their plans just become increasingly out of reach due to overdevelopment because the developers always have more money to put in. So if you put forward this subdivision, you will be outpricing young families who are working towards having a home and a yard for their children. There's also issues with the suburb and the topography. There's a lot of clay soil at CB Downs. House cracking is common. We need good drainage and it's unsuitable for high density development because we need the gardens and soil for the runoff to absorb and help stop the cracking around the place. Being hills facing and the incline, there's extended loss of privacy and overshadowing with two-storey buildings and development close to fences. We've experienced the two-storey being built in our street, which we feel is out of character, and we've all lost the privacy of our backyards. I wouldn't like to see this continue where there's not just one dwelling but two dwellings and then we lose the vegetation that we see. I think the ageing in place argument is quite flawed. I work as a nurse with elderly people. I think most elderly people trying to look at knocking down homes, negotiate loans, negotiating selling contracts, I think a lot of people find that overwhelming. It's simply easier to sell the house and move into an existing property where they know what they get. I would question how many people would actually see that as a viable option as they are ageing. As far as future generations, I think when you do planning, you need to understand that as homeowners, we do not have absolute right over that land. You are a custodian while you own the house, and councils need to protect future generations so that there are suitable properties for them. It's not just about you own the land, you should be able to subdivide. We need to retain some homes for future generations, for children and families who want backyards. The argument that there's playgrounds and parks, they are very valued, but they do not suffice the needs of all the needs of families with young children. Parents also need a bit of downtime. When you're in the park, you need to constantly supervise the children, negotiate with other members of the public. Some might be antisocial. There's often the amenities are just awful. There's no private places for women breastfeeding to put a child down. So we do need some family homes. It's true that not all young people these days can afford it, but I can say for my home and many others, that becomes a haven for all the people who are in houses without yards, that it forms a community, and it's not just the benefit to the person who owns it. And I think we do need to, it'll be nice to have some suburbs retained where they're, rather than having subdivision haphazardly everywhere,
30 seconds.
Concrete, it'll be nice to have some areas that do retain the leafy feel and calm habitat that we do so value in CB Downs. Sorry, I'm not very prepared. I've got more there, but you can...
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for your time. Thank you. Megan O'Rourke, Seacon Heights. Robert Lloyd, Seacon Heights. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillors and Mayor. As a long-term resident of the council who's worked hard in his local community and supported the home and suburb, I'm really disgusted that I have to be here today begging to preserve the amenity and lifestyle that I've worked hard for the last 35 years. With regard to process, I've spoken to numerous residents in my area, and none of them received any communication from the council and heard about it third hand. Once again, this is very insulting. When you're paying $3,000 a year in rates, it could have at least been included in the bill. I'm also concerned about the objectivity of the process, given the accelerated timeline, lack of promotion, the fact that this has not been tested at the ballot box, and to top it all off, I've already received my invitation to an investment seminar on how I can profit from the changes made in the council planning that haven't even been approved yet. I'd like to strongly oppose the planning changes, particularly the amalgamation of the Hills area into the Southern Hills area and the zoning for the whole Hills face. The original intent of the Hills face was actually for the rest of the city as well, to maintain minimum housing visibility and a nice green belt around the city. We've been through this three or four times with different planning reviews, and it's always stood up as a major reason for maintaining this. The second issue that we're seeing with this is the large amount of urban infill with a loss of green space. The trees and lawns aren't only attractive, they actually provide cooling, which has already been mentioned, provide a haven for birds. When I walk the dogs in the morning, I don't see cars all over the streets. I hear birds and flowers and see trees in the area I walk around, unlike some other areas in the council, and I'd like to preserve this. It's just interesting that, as well as this strategy, the council's also been selling parks, or trying to sell parks, according to the local paper. The roadway congestion has already been covered. I'm very concerned not only
with roadway congestion, but access to emergency services, particularly with hammerhead blocks where people are buried out the back, and less accessible as well. We've talked also about the additional load on utilities. People, you know, we talk about stormwater, wastewater, power supply, internet and gas. It may be interesting to note that the NBN model that uses copper is going to have significant problems dealing, because the copper's not already there in the ground for hammerhead blocks or new developments, so that's going to require fibre, so somebody's going to have to sort that out as well. I just think that this is a really lost opportunity for Marion to be strategic about how they redevelop and cope with increasing population. If the population does increase, which it probably will within the council area, the ability to build high quality, high density living as we see interstate and overseas is one that is being wasted in this plan. Most of the submission from the Grattan Institute at the beginning of the submissions talked about walkable, friendly, you know, social environments. These are not being created by hammerhead blocks and bedrooms that are so small you can't put a bed and a wardrobe in the same room. We've got access to the Tonsley Precinct land on Cement Hill, and we've got this wonderful facilities, including Marion Shopping Centre, Oaklands Railway Station, a world-class swimming centre, which I believe we're all still paying for, and the opportunity to develop a decent high-density community close to those facilities is something that shouldn't be wasted in this plan. I'm not saying that's a 10-year plan. I'm saying, you know, as part of these strategies, a 30-year strategy to do that is appropriate, but I don't see that spelled out within this. My final point is it's important to maintain suburbs within the council that are family-friendly, maintain the quarter-acre block, the trees, the places for children to play, the amenities and our traditional way of life as an option within the council area. I've just, in the last 30 seconds,
thank you.
Don't believe this addresses it, and I urge you all to read a book called The End of Oil, which spoke about the creation of high density living with increased transport costs and poor transport, and they called it Suburbistan.
Thank you. Valentina Vinokurov.
Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And you've got a presentation as well? Yes, thank you.
I see six main points. A lot of them have been addressed. What we're looking at is... No, if you could go back to the first one. We're looking at a whole state issue in terms of changing the hill space zoning, and that's what I oppose. I'm also looking at the demographics, the way Marion Council over the last 10 years increased 25%, which is only 2.5% according to the census. If you go to the next slide, 2.5% per year, and what we're looking at is how much of the infill are we covering to serve the state of South Australia, which only grew 6% this year in terms of population as well. A lot of people aren't aware of the changes that are occurring. We certainly weren't had communication in our area, Seacombe Heights or Seaview Downs, where I have family living. There's a lot of arterial road, South Road, people coming through on Seacombe Road, Marion Road, Brighton Road. We all know the difficulties that are occurring there. I've lived in the lower areas where there could be proposals. You could have a subdivision occur there, buy up three houses that were formerly housing trusts, build six houses or more, as has been happening. If you go on to the next slide. we have basically 78%, 85% and then 48% of household owners. Seacom Gardens, when you drive through there, and Marion Council has actually acknowledged that there are mistakes in the way subdivisions have occurred. But what it shows that although you may put in very close built houses, the ownership of the houses has not increased. And that came through today with the ANU report, where it said that we are not increasing house ownership. If we compare the density, you can see 12.9, 9.6, 30. And then if we have a look at Unley Park, that is close to the city, there's fairly close density there. They only have 17.35 per hectare. Burnside or Dana, 9.06. So Marion Council needs to look at what the whole area, Marino, Hallett Cove, look at them separately, not just put them all as one blanket, as some people have said. Could you go on to the next slide? So, Hillsface, what's the impact? I've lived in the Marion Council for over 50 years. I've lived on a 1.25-acre block. I've lived in a house that was very deep. So I've made choices to live here, as most people have said they have. We were regulated in colour of the bricks. We had to have specific type of greenery. Australian wildlife would be attracted to it. And I think you mustn't get confused with the point that downsizing is an issue for Hillsface policy change. My neighbour wants to downsize. She knows she may have to move out. But that should not lead the council to suddenly start looking at changing the Hillsface zone and having greater subdivision. Next slide, please. The issues people have referred to, the planning regulations, where if you have a look at that, that's a picture just last week, Seacom Gardens, three cars on one block, no greenery. The planning authority may say you need lawn, play area. It isn't happening, and that's something that Marion Council needs to look at. We used to have housing inspectors. So increased street parking is, I think, an issue that I've also looked at open space. I don't need to talk about safety. I've had people saying they've backed into other cars that are parked on the other side. Next slide, please. So what we're looking at, this is Seacom Heights. I used to own that block of land too. It
was 30 seconds. For us.
So all those areas, the play, water runoff, power supply, transport, they're all issues that have been mentioned. Next one. Next slide, please. Lack of transparency. I don't think the Marion Council has communicated with people. My next-door neighbour didn't know this was happening tonight. We have not had the communication. It wasn't identified as a Marion Council's issue when you people were elected. So where are you going on?
Thank you. That's time. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll just ask.
Opportunity to do something great. Use your time wisely.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Brad Banks from Dover Gardens. Chris Clark, Seacom Gardens. Nina Caruso, speaking to Seacom Gardens in Acorns Park. Diane Lynch, Seacom Gardens. Xenia Velaris, Stewart. Richard and Pat Trott, Stewart, thank you. You've got a presentation as well that you sent through.
Sorry.
When you're ready.
perhaps the people up the back can hear me, because I couldn't hear a lot of the other people, and I'm sitting right down the front. My name is Richard Trott, and I've lived on Marion Road at Sturt for 55 years with my wife, who could not be here tonight, unfortunately. Before I move on to my submission, I'd like to quickly comment on the communication between the council and its residents. Many of my locals in my area, Sturt, did not receive the two letters referred to on the website, one from Chris Hanna and another giving the most basic presentation, a letter at such a scale that it's very difficult to decipher. Those that did get these, Mayor Hanna's letter, noted the rezoning would take place between Sturt Road and the tram line, and said, oh, well, that doesn't influence me, and promptly went back to sleep. They're going to get a shock soon when they find that the DPA covers more than that and includes the area south of Sturt Road on Marion Road. In addition, there are a couple of realities that need to be borne in mind with this communication bid. Many of the local residents do not subscribe to the advertiser. They can't afford it. And so the public notice posted therein does not reach them. In addition, delivery of the local newspaper has been arbitrarily discontinued, which is another issue, by the way, not subject to this meeting, but the residents of this Sturt feel very strongly about this. The local newspaper has just been cut off, and it doesn't matter what you do, you cannot get it back. And that's unfortunate, because it leaves those same people with no way of knowing what is going on locally. Quite a high percentage of them are elderly and do not have computers. Many others also don't understand English well enough to comprehend. And my discussions with many of them revealed they are totally oblivious to the impending DBA and how it's likely to affect them. Under these conditions, and in competition with professional developers employing professional services for handsome fees, it is nigh on impossible for them to put forward a meaningful submission. Now to my submission. We live on a service road. Oh, and by the way, I fully support the views of Robert Crouch in relation to buck passing by the state government. And we'll get back to that in a minute perhaps. We live on a service road that runs alongside Marion Road between Sturt Road and South Road, and unfortunately the map that's over here is at such a scale that you can't figure out where that is. I urge you to think that you're at the intersection of Marion and Sturt Roads, and you head south from that intersection. All the area on the right-hand side, as you go south, is a service road alongside Marion Road, behind the plane trees. Oh, I'm sorry, too late. Never mind. And that service road is a single lane, one way. The road is 5.3 metres wide, not 6 metres, as suggested in some other submissions. Allowing a 3 or 4 storey development on a service road is against all common sense, even if the council thinks they are doing the right thing for Chairman Rao. It is against the very principle outlined on page 38 of the DPA, which says that good building practice would observe a ratio of building height to street width of 1 to 1, which would result in buildings of no more than one storey adjacent to the service road. It would appear that those proposing the rezoning have taken the entire width of Marion Road as the street width, not realising that the service road exists. That would result in ignoring the intent of the good building practice referred to earlier. It would also make parking a serious problem. We all know that the current rules have spawned much more on-street parking, which is already being seen on the service road. Imagine the effect if we go ahead with 2, 3 and 4 storey buildings. This is a service road, and the primary reason for its existence is to enable services like rubbish collection, fire brigade and ambulance, and courier parcel deliveries to be provided to the residents. It was never intended to be a car park, and will most certainly happen if the proposals to rezone the area are adopted.
30 seconds.
It's not a big main road calling out for multi-storey developments. The real elephant in the room is that we haven't learned to live with population growth, and the alternative must surely bode sadly for our descendants. Thank you.
Thank you.